Hello, and welcome back to another edition of the Three Good Things podcast, where, you guessed it, I talk about three good things. I'm Shardul, and let's just jump into today's podcast. Today's podcast, we have a guest. Haven't done a guest podcast in a long time, but happy to have today's guest on the show. Our guest today is Joshima, who's the music lead at Brown Girl Magazine and CEO of a brand strategy consultancy called Ode. Joshima is dedicated to working with BIPOC communities and children of immigrants. When she's not discovering new artists or podcasting at Central Sauce, she's probably trying to bongra to hip-hop or eating french fries or hosting some fire rooms on Clubhouse. Welcome to the podcast, Joshima.
Hello. Thanks for having me. I'm excited. That intro music was really fun.
Thanks. Yeah, my buddy Sorab made that back in college, I think. Maybe a couple of years after college. I don't remember. And there's also outro music. So it's a little small production I have here, but it's been interesting. How you doing? How's your Tuesday afternoon?
I'm good. It's been a really good day, actually. How's yours?
It's been interesting. Yeah, a couple meetings in the morning. I actually forgot to have lunch. So, yeah, things are going great.
In the name of podcasting, he's starving, everyone. In the name of podcasting.
Big facts only. Yeah, let's just jump into it. So how'd we meet? Do you have any funny stories?
Yeah, you and I met at sunset hiking Camelback Mountain in Arizona. No, I'm kidding. We met on Clubhouse and then realized we both lived in Arizona at some point. So I like to think we're friends, even though you send me really, really awful Taylor Swift gifts.
I think that is the sign of a very budding friendship, where you can just communicate over gifts, especially of the variety of my future wife, T. Sweezy. But yeah, we do share that Arizona connection. How long were you in Arizona?
8 years. 8 years.
Wow. And you went to Barry Goldwater, is that right?
I did. I went to Sierra Verde Middle School and Barry Goldwater High School.
Goodness. I actually don't think I've talked about my Arizona past on the podcast. Maybe I have. I don't remember. But yeah, so I grew up in Arizona. I went to Cerritos Elementary, Altadena Middle, and then Desert Vista High School. And for those of you that don't know, Desert Vista High School and Barry Goldwater High School have nothing to do with each other. They're not
literally
rivals.
Nothing whatsoever.
Yeah. They're not that close to each other. They're not even rivals, but they just happen to both be in Arizona. Where were you living though?
I lived next to Loop 101, so I lived on 67th and 101. Since I don't live there anymore, this is not incriminating, but yeah.
Yeah, I just meant city, but that works perfectly. Yeah, I grew up in Ahwatukee.
Yeah. I've only been there once.
Wait, really? I mean, you never heard of Ahwatukee?
I've been there once.
Oh, okay. What do you think?
It felt like every other town in Arizona. Oh, lots of great cacti and lots of sun.
Yeah, I guess that's all it is. But yeah, it was great. Growing up in Ahwatukee was very interesting. It's also called All White Tukey because the majority of the people there are white, which just is what it is. My parents moved to Chandler shortly after, and that is home now, which I'm going home for the holidays in a week or so. What about you? Are you going home for the holidays?
New York is home, but neither of my parents are here, but I may be making a safe and COVID-friendly international trip to India soon, so.
Ooh, that sounds exciting.
Hopefully, yeah. I hope so. We'll see, pending COVID regulations.
Cool. Diving into kind of what you're doing at Brown Girl, what does being a music lead entail? What is your day-to-day and kind of what's your story of how you got to Brown Girl magazine?
Yeah, I'm a big Brown Girl fan. I've been there coming on 3 years now, and I owe a good chunk of my career and personal growth to Brown Girl, specifically Trisha, the founder. She's amazing, and she's on Clubhouse now, so you guys can check her out. But she used to share a WeWork space with someone I used to do music events with, and we connected, and I was like, hey, can I write about music and mental health and help with some marketing campaigns? She was like, yeah, okay. So the platform lets me recognize people that often aren't recognized by their community at all, especially musicians behind the scenes, social impact activists, a lot of small businesses and brands, and that brings me a lot of joy. So every week we run a playlist, and we have a new Music Mondays series on Spotify, and we invite a guest curator, which is usually someone from the music industry at large, that comes and tells us their 10 favorite songs by South Asian artists. So that's currently one of the projects I'm really enjoying.
Woohoo! And for those of you that don't know, Joshma has probably one of the best music tastes that I've heard in a long time, especially when it comes to Bollywood. And aside from sending funny Taylor Swift gifts back and forth, we've sent a couple songs back and forth as well, because I'm also a music lover. But when it comes to like finding new music or elevating music, you also manage an artist, right? Or artists?
I do.
Who is it, and how'd you get into that?
Her name is Avanti Nagral. I had been doing what every person that works in music says they did, which is like unofficial A&R and doing strategy with a ton of musicians. But managing a musician is like being married to them. And so every person I found that I wanted to be work married to was literally married to their manager. And so I was like, well, what do? I don't want to be in a three-way. And so I actually interviewed Avanti over a year and a half ago, and we dated, quote unquote, for 6 months. And this time last year, I went to Bombay with her in January, hung out with her and her family. And in February, we signed the ink on our deal and decided to get together and have me manage her. So she's a soul pop artist based between Bombay and Boston.
Did you always want to manage an artist, or was that more of like a natural fit when you met Avanti? Did I say her name right?
Yeah, you are saying it right. No, Avanti will tell you that she had to convince me that I would be a great manager because I had some aversion to being like, I don't want to manage artists. I don't want to be in that ecosystem. But arguably, I think I've been blessed with one of the best artists to manage because she's more like a business partner, less like somebody who I have to convince to do things. So
that's super
cool. I did
cool.
not ever see myself being an arts manager, but never say never, right?
Never say never. Famous quote from Justin Bieber. Indeed. Yeah. Do you manage other artists? Is that kind of where you want to grow, or what's your goal, or do you have a goal, or is it kind of like where the world takes you?
I think it's a little bit of both. I would be super open to managing different types of acts, maybe DJs, producers, things like that. But in the short term, I think I'm really happy managing one artist and being able to grow them kind of in the way that you would grow a startup. And hopefully I can continue doing strategy with a lot of artists or giving them booking opportunities.
Speaking of startups, you're the CEO of a brand strategy consultancy called Ode. What is that about, and what are you doing there?
Ah, yes, my baby. We're coming on to year one. So that's exciting. Hopefully, if we hit February, that will be year one of our company, meaning that
Woo-hoo!
We survived. So Ode is a brand strategy and marketing development consultancy. And essentially what we do is work with predominantly children of immigrant and immigrant-owned small and mid-level businesses and brands. And we build out infrastructure that likely they don't have either the knowledge, labor, or financial resources to completely outsource to digital firms or hire someone in-house. And we spent the last year working with businesses from food and beverage to nonprofit to social impact to hospitality to musicians and artists in our network. And it's been amazing. There's something really beautiful about, I guess, seeing folks that didn't think they'd make it through the pandemic or finally realizing that marketing matters, realize that they can sell without selling out. So we're pretty proud of that. And my co-founder is a really good friend of mine named Shushana Chaudhry, and we met on film sets. So our long-term goal in life is basically to be like the Kimmel Witherspoon film and TV production studio, but we're slowly making our way there.
That is super cool. How'd you get onto film sets? How'd you meet your co-founder?
I, once upon a time, was a production assistant on a Black American series called A Love Tale. And so I was learning how to do things like mark floors and carry boxes and light things. And then when I met Trisha at Brown Girl, she had someone that was filming a series and they needed an assistant director. And she was like, I think you can do that. And then Shushana was there and she was the DOP and everybody else was late to the set in South Asian fashion. So the two of us got to know each other over chai and coffee.
Wow.
And we've been friends ever since.
Wow. It's a big step from just going from like friends sending gifts back and forth to founding a company. So what is kind of that process like? So after you met on the film set, what was kind of the trajectory that you guys talked about of like, maybe here's a cool idea and then actually doubling down on it?
The project we met on ended up not materializing largely due to the team whose project it was. And so she and I were like, imagine if we could do this way. And Shoshana has an extensive experience of raising funds for films, doing short films, working on them. She's professionally a videographer. And so over the last 3 years, we've done a lot of things. We did an 18-second micro short for a Giphy short film contest for about 2 years ago. And we knew it was a really silly thing to enter because this was obviously animation and fun gear, but we're both extremely, like, deep, nuanced, dark creators. So we created this really deep, meaningful 18-second short you guys can find on my socials. But it's essentially my eye with the flags of India, Bangladesh, and Pakistan in it. And I'm crying. And I have lots of kajal on my face. And she color edited it beautifully. And our friend Ria Anjali sang the song Vande Mataram in the back. And we talked about this whole essential deconstruction of a beautiful people because of lines that somebody else drew. And so we totally knew we weren't going to win this contest, but it was an excuse for us to do something together. And we ended up realizing that we speak the same language. I couldn't have found anyone else that would do what she did to that video and film it in the way that she did based on what I said or communicated. So she's kind of my other half. And some point in January, I went to India last year and I signed all these clients to do events in America. And then COVID happened, and that obviously wasn't going to be a reality. So I called her and I said, hey, I have this idea. Do you want to start a company with me so I can stop consulting? And then she was like, well, yeah, it's a pandemic, so I guess we have something to do. And now we're here.
Wow. Yeah. So you went from managing to now doing the consultancy. Is it just you two right now, or are you... Do you have plans of like growing the consultancy, growing Ode to be supporting bigger brands? What's kind of the plans for Ode for the future?
Yeah, so it was the two of us and an intern, and Shoshana still has her full-time job, so this is my full-time job. We are bootstrapping hardcore. I think we would like to keep things collective model because we both do other things, such as us wanting to take on film projects or me managing a musician or working with a healthcare startup. There's a lot of things happening, but our goal is to be able to hire out to our community whenever we can. And we have a pretty robust one. So we'll scale in that way.
Sick. Yeah, kind of the next question, which we had in the, is it called a writer? I forget what the pre-stuff is called before a podcast.
I mean, listen, if this was a writer, I'd be asking for coffee or tequila, Shardul. Hello, my bio talks about French fries and I didn't get any French fries mailed to me.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. Wait, so you did mention you're trying to do Bhangra to hip hop or eating French fries. What's the best French fries you've had in New York City?
Okay, Shoestring French fries, always, always, always. And there's a couple of places that do them well, but I think The Smith is one of my favorite set of Shoestring French fries.
Okay, I think it might just be a New York thing, but I feel like once you've lived in New York or you're from New York for a while, you have to know everything about where the best X food is. Because like you and a couple other people I've met from New York, they just like remember everything. While I've been in San Francisco for probably like 2.5 years, and I still think the best French fries are In-N-Out, which is the chain.
When you come to visit, we'll take you on a food tour. And I think it's because we're pretty passionate about those things. They don't call us the best coast for no reason.
That's a stretch, but we don't have enough time to get into that one. But yeah, going down the rioter questions, what are three things that have helped you during this quarantine time and sheltering in place?
Three things that have helped me during quarantine. I think doing less so I could do better. Mm. Desperation, which is always a fun one to say out loud, but I needed to make ends meet. So that meant I had to kick imposter syndrome's ass and just start doing things I had been sitting on. So I'm grateful for need. And then therapy.
Awesome. Yeah, connect with all three of those really well. I feel like I've made a career out of imposter syndrome right now because I generally don't know what I'm doing with the majority of the things I put out to the internet. And sometimes things work really well and sometimes they don't. But I'm a huge proponent of like consistency over time equals success in however you define it. That's kind of how I started the podcast.
That's amazing. Yeah, I often think that most of us talk about people and what they've achieved and not how they got there. And I think most of life in any industry really is how persistent and consistent you are and how many times you show up for yourself versus how good you are or how talented you are. That's actually not the most important thing.
Big facts. And I feel like ever since you started hosting the Big Facts Room on Clubhouse, just the phrase of like has entered my vernacular on like a semi-regular basis. I don't know if
you it's do a good use or a it a lot. Thing. I feel like you're our brand ambassador.
I think so. If you want
Does
to send me,
does this mean we have to pay you because we don't have that kind of money?
I mean, I would be happily paid in gulab jam or French fries or both, to be quite honest.
We'll send.
I will say the one time we were talking about pizza, you did actually send me $5 for something or another, and I don't remember why, but I was like, I appreciate it. I totally appreciate this.
I did. Awesome. You hosted a Taylor Swift listening room, and you kept joking about your radio presentation personality, and you talked about your Cash App and your Venmo, and then I thought, listen, he's suffered and listened to this whole album for hours and taken our song requests, so maybe he deserves a real slice of pizza, considering you were talking about Papa John's and delivery and branch and not folding.
Big fact. There it is again. Yeah, I don't know anyone that folds their pizza. I feel like that's just a very, either a very New York thing or just like a very odd thing.
We're going to work on you meeting better people.
Oh, no,
wow. I'm kidding, guys. Fold your pizza. Oof. The best way to eat it, it tastes better.
I have a friend of mine who eats pizza with a fork and a knife, and as long as we can agree that like that's not the move, then I think we're fine.
Agree.
But yeah, I did actually have, it was Chico's in San Francisco, which is basically the equivalent of Papa John's when it comes to San Francisco, like pizza. But it was a last minute, late night order, and I think I got ranch on the side. Just because, like, that's the way I like to do it. But it is what it is. But kind of going back to the big facts is you've modded and led a few big rooms on Clubhouse. So what are the rooms you lead, and why do you lead them? And if you want to plug them, go ahead.
Awesome. Yeah, we talked about imposter syndrome earlier. So I think for a lot of years, I got so good at supporting creators and initiatives and businesses, but not supporting my own endeavors and things I wanted to do. And so I felt like Clubhouse let me deal with one challenge at a time. So I didn't have to worry about what I look like or where I am or proximity to things or ability to be somewhere. I could just worry about what I was saying. And I'm really privileged that my current professional and personal life involves a ton of wonderful South Asians that defy the monolith and are robust human beings that are super supportive and wonderful. And on Clubhouse, I started to realize that not a lot of people have that community. And so if I could forge one, I'd love to do that. So I host two rooms currently on a weekly basis. One of them is called Brown Dating, Big Facts, which you reference frequently. I co-host that with a good friend of mine who's a finance comedian. His name's Anish Mitra. You guys should check him out. But he and I were just shooting the shit one day. Can I curse on here?
Yeah.
Chatting, and it sort of started as a joke, but we realized that no one in our age range or intergenerational age ranges talks about intimacy or gender roles or trauma we all carry into things, or why sometimes romantic entanglements this year is a trigger word, sometimes don't work for us or are things we need to unpack. So that's on Mondays at 8 p.m. Eastern time on Clubhouse, ladies and gentlemen. And I think some folks have met someone they might fancy, so that's cool. And the other room is called South Asian Founders and Entrepreneurs, which is on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern time. And I sort of realized as I'm helping a client raise seed and learning what the VC world is like, that a lot of folks still feel very disjointed from their communities and often have to convince others that somehow their identity or culture or access to community is an asset. And I would love to see a marketplace where we don't have to do that and we don't hold each other's cultural quantifications against one another. So that's become a room where we can create job opportunities, support one another, and hopefully we'll turn into a syndicate next year.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that'll be super cool. But you joined Clubhouse fairly recently too, right? You dove in, and I think I've been on the platform for about 6 months or so.
You're an OG, Shardul.
I wish. I'm not actually an OG. The OGs joined in like April and May. But you joined fairly recently, right? Like, how'd you hear of Clubhouse and what made you come on?
I joined in October. I had some friends that were on it. And then a good friend of mine who is an incredible rapper and spoken word artist, whose moniker is Taizu, was like, listen, you keep playing games. You love talking. You got to get on this voice app. And then I was like, all right, you right. And then I did. And then I got scared and I didn't talk until November. So.
But to your credit, you definitely dove in and like you mentioned, both the clubs you host, both the rooms you host. I think those are huge in terms of just connecting people and finding South Asian representation. When it comes to music, how do you kind of find your leads and what do you look at in terms of what makes an artist pop or what you vibe with? Or in general, what you want to write about?
When I was a kid, I used to read shampoo bottles in the shower. And I used to obsessively read ingredient lists. I had a lot of allergies growing up, but I also just would read them because for whatever reason, I felt like that was a calming experience. But I had this obsession with figuring out who was behind things I enjoyed or what was in them. So like when the movie ended at the movie theater, I was the kid standing by the staircase while the person walked around with the flashlight, and I wouldn't leave until the credits were done rolling. And so I think I started discovering these different folks that worked in music or did music supervision, and then I became obsessed with the songs that they chose to sync on film and TV. And from there, the obsession carried over to, are there people from my community that do these things and live these jobs? And that's kind of how I started deciding who to write about. And then music discovery became this kind of activity of, okay, if there's these artists in the diaspora from these backgrounds that sing in all different genres and languages, then, you know, they end up on my Spotify playlist, and then I get a lot of more like this to dive into.
Yeah, that's super interesting. How do you kind of curate right now? Is it mostly through playlists? Do people send you stuff? Or do you kind of have a couple like places that you go to just to find artists that you want to feature?
Yeah, so there's a couple of ways. I definitely used to use social media a lot more than I do now, just by searching certain keywords or looking in certain genres. At Brown Girl, we have a type form, essentially. If you DM us and you would like your music featured, you fill out that type form, and then I listen to it as any other discovery process would. So a lot of it has been submissions, which I cannot express how much joy it brings me, because 5 years ago, there were the same 5 to 7 male artists that have been around since you and I were kids to cover, and now there's 500 mm-hmm. artists from around the world, and that brings me a lot of joy. For Central Sauce, that's a hip-hop collective, and I'm their newest member and currently the only girl, but we have folks submit to us as well. And outside of that, I find a lot of music on Twitter and through YouTube videos.
Through YouTube videos. What's your most recent artist that you found that is maybe a hidden gem to others, aside from your own artist you manage?
Yeah, I'm not going to plug her, don't worry. I found this artist who clearly is not that small, but there's two. Okay, so there's one named Noor Chahal, who I discovered because her video autoplayed on some indie music I was listening to, so she's really cool. And then the other one is Chica, who my friend Ria Ghosh, who's also on this platform and works in music, introduced me to, but Chika. Her rapping and singing is incredible. And I don't know what rock I lived under that I didn't know this person that's impacting millions of people, but if you guys haven't heard her music, please go listen to her NPR Tiny Desk concert.
There we go. You heard it here first. Two great artists to go check out. And if you send me over their info, I'll put it in the description so people can go listen to the Tiny Desk concert. Our last question before the learning segment and then lightning round, and then we'll open it up for the audience, is kind of a thought scratcher, I guess. What is one question that no one has asked you that you want to be asked? And I'll answer this as well.
A question I want to be asked. Yeah. I was thinking about this earlier today. And I think a question that I wish people asked me and a question I wish we asked other people more is what their values are instead of what their accolades and accomplishments are. I think a lot of times values dictate who people are and why they are, as opposed to the things they've accomplished. Usually that's just a consequence of values.
Yeah, I guess I don't want to double click on it. Wow. I need to change the words I use. Jesus. But what are your values?
If I had to pick a few to talk about, I'd say authenticity, community, strategy, and happiness.
Okay, yeah. So you've given it a lot more thought than I have, because my values are a little bit more rambly. It's definitely authenticity, trustworthiness, loyalty, and I think kindness. I'm a huge proponent of like everyone is fighting a battle that you can't see. So just be kind to other people. And that's kind of the idea of the podcast and generally what I try to do on the internet.
Yeah. But in terms I've of... I noticed like, you're very... when I did my... stalker deep dive on Charduel many weeks ago. For all of you listening, don't pretend that you don't do it, okay? I don't do it for people I'm dating, but I certainly do it for friends, networking folks, anything professional. I want to know. You are very, very conscious that you only spread positivity or neutral opinion statements, things on social media. And I really appreciate that because I think the world's really saturated with a lot of negativity and scarcity. And the only way to combat that is to not do it.
Aw, thank you. Yeah, it's sometimes a lonely and uphill battle, but I think it's what is it Mulan that has the song? Yeah, it's a battle worth fighting for. So yeah, in terms of what question no one has asked me that I want to be asked, I've always found this question interesting and I don't actually have an answer, but it's an answer to a question that no one's actually asked me. And I feel like it's a very introspective, reflect on it type of question, which is, it's short, but I feel like it has a lot deeper meanings to it. And it's like, it's the equivalent of like Simon Sinek's find your why, but in a question form, it's why is Shardul, or like, why is Joshima? I don't know the answer to like, why is Joshima or to why is Shardul, but finding like whatever your why is in the world is, I think, a great way to center people or center yourself, and it, understanding like what your purpose is and why you're doing what you're doing. And once you kind of have that, it becomes your kind of compass to steer through whatever life may throw at you. So
I think that's so beautiful. Yeah, I don't know if I have a concise answer to what my why is, but I definitely think questions that treat us as beings in an active form are really important, because often we have identities we've given ourselves in our heads that we don't actually embody.
Mm-hmm.
Because we forget that we can't just be people we think we are. We have to actually be that person. And so I love that. I don't know what my why is yet, but I hope we find out what both of our whys are.
Yeah. I feel like mine is ever changing. And I think I've just gotten more comfortable with that. One of the questions I hate being asked is, what is your 4 to 5 year plan? Or like, what is your 5 year plan?
That question solidly makes me cringe.
So I won't ask
it. I don't know. I didn't have anything in this lifetime planned that happened to me. So
Yeah, exactly. So like, I don't even think that far ahead. Sometimes I don't even know what I'm doing for lunch tomorrow, let alone like, where do I see myself in 3 years? Or like, where do I see myself in 5 years?
No, you're not eating Chico's because you've been taught better.
That's not a guarantee. Chico's is quick and efficient, and for that reason I like it.
Should we eat for efficiency? We can talk about that another time.
In some capacity, efficiency is important when it comes to food. But at the same time, having Chico's every day, similar to having anything every day, is probably not a good look, or like a good idea.
All forms of excess are detrimental.
I think we're just saying quotes back and forth at this point.
Yeah, basically we're just armchair philosophers.
that's what podcasters do, right?
So we're just professional conversationalists, really, guys?
Exactly, right? Some podcasts you get a lot of value from, like Novels Podcast and like Lewis Howes and other great podcasters. This one is just, you're just listening to two people banter back and forth about pizza.
I would like to think that that adds insurmountable value to these people's lives.
I think so. I think they've gotten a lot of value.
If not, it adds to mine.
There you go. Yeah. If nothing else, we've plugged a couple artists. We've talked about pizza. We're always learning new things when it comes to having conversations, which brings you to the next segment, which is called the learning segment. And it's a fairly new segment where I try to talk about things that we're currently learning and how we're going about them. I'm a big believer in life being a never-ending journey. And I was recently reading about the growth mindset, which is a term coined by Carol Dweck, basically saying that life is a never-ending journey of lessons and you never actually stop learning. So in that vein, Joshima, what are you currently learning?
Ooh, this is hard to narrow. I've learned a lot of things. Two things. I'm learning to forgive myself because the only person's validation you need is your own. And the second thing I'm working on is to cognitively reset. I think when you're a kid and you learn things, it's a lot easier because you're a lot less jaded. But as an adult, I'm working on this logic of using active I statements like I am a healthy person, I lead a healthy life, I am ambitious, as opposed to negative statements that science says our brain can't really process. So hopefully I'll learn how to make some changes. What are you learning?
Two things. One is patience, in all aspects, with like COVID-19 and job stuff and interviewing right now for different positions, blah, blah, blah. Not forcing things as much as I used to, and just sitting and being patient with myself. I recently took up meditating in the morning. I'm trying to relearn or maybe learn for the first time how to be more patient. And then outside of that, I'm learning guitar. Trying to teach myself how to play guitar, because the only instrument I learned how to play before that was seventh grade clarinet. And I was the seventh chair out of seven kids. So basically the worst clarinet player at Altadena Middle School.
That's really funny. I have a guitar I haven't touched in about like 8 or 9 years, and I'm not really proud of that. So I hope I start learning again in 2021. But I'm infamous for my quitting cello, quitting the flute, quitting recorder, quitting harmonium. So
at least you tried, though, and then you quit. I didn't even try anything else. I think I played piano for like maybe a week, and I learned how to play chopsticks, and I was like, all right, let's go play basketball or chess instead.
To be fair, I was a very tiny third grader, and this like lugging the cello back and forth thing wasn't going to work out for me.
Yeah, I was also really small in elementary and middle school, so it is really funny when I would win trophies, especially like chess trophies that are giant, and there's a couple photos where I won chess trophies that were taller than me. And it's the funniest thing when you see like a little kid carrying around a prize that is literally bigger than he is, and he's trying to like figure out how to carry this thing.
I feel like you're the dream child, chess player. You won awards bigger than your head.
I feel like if that's the dream child, I don't know what they were dreaming of. hopefully not. I feel like everything went downhill after I retired from chess competitively.
I don't think you've peaked yet, Chardul. I think there might be some redeeming qualities happening.
Hopefully. This next piece is called a lightning round, and then after that, we'll open it up for Q&A. Feel free to raise your hand and come up to the stage if you have a question for either of us, or if you just want to talk about stuff. But this is a lightning round, where I ask lightning round questions. They're this or that questions. You can give some answer if you want to, or just pick the one word. Joshua, are you ready for the lightning round?
Probably not, but let's do it.
Great. All right. Pancakes or waffles?
Waffles.
Dogs or cats?
Dogs.
West Coast or East Coast? This is a pointless question.
East Coast.
Yeah, obviously picks the wrong answer.
Don't play yourself.
City or suburbs?
Ooh, both.
Oh, okay. All right. Netflix or YouTube?
YouTube.
Phone calls or text?
Phone calls.
Interesting. Big party or small gathering?
Depends on the situation.
Okay. If you want to elaborate, go ahead.
I'm a big believer in quality interactions. So I prefer usually smaller settings, but that being said, I love hosting. So I'm known for my themed parties, things like Mayfills or speakeasies, signature cocktails called Soot and Bell. So yeah, you know, sometimes it's a big party situation. Sometimes it's a small party situation.
Nice. I also just realized that hand raising was off. So if you want to raise your hand, go ahead. This is the part of the podcast where I'll open it up to audience interaction. So if y'all want to ask us a question or if you have something to talk about, feel free to raise your hand and I'll bump you up to stage.
No one wants to know about us, Chardul.
I guess so, yeah. I mean, some people have been here listening for the last half hour, which is interesting. But yeah, do you want to talk about the Big Facts Room? And that was how we originally met. But what is that room? And do you have any funny stories? I have one, but go ahead. I'm curious to learn what you think is funny about the room.
There are a few funny stories. I think what I find, it's not a story, but what I find funniest is different weeks people come with different energies. And I think for us, often we start out with like a very lighthearted, welcoming environment, but folks feel very safe sharing a lot of their inner workings, things they've experienced. And I'm a big fan of that, and it brings me a lot of joy. But then other folks say things that seem to be more inappropriate than that room can handle. So I always find the dichotomy really funny. I also find it funny that yesterday, what day is today? Tuesday? Yeah. Yesterday, folks who I know in real life joined the room, who I haven't seen in upwards of 7 years, that have some pretty embarrassing stories of me were in there. So always good to be humbled.
That's actually the craziest thing about Clubhouse, is because there's this serendipity and kind of like ephemeralness, I guess, of like, you don't know who's going to be in a room, or you don't know who like is on the platform. People will just like come back into your life that you thought, you know, you have like your own little space in. It's almost like being at a bar and like your friend randomly shows up and you're like, oh my God, what are you doing here? Right. And I think some of that I've also seen on the platform. And also it's just very interesting when you cross like your digital life with your real life. And it just provides sometimes it's great. Sometimes it's like, oh gosh, you're going to tell stories about like my childhood and there other people are going to know things. But typically it's been great. My funny thing is, I forget which week it was. I think was yesterday week 4 or week 5?
That sounds right.
Sure. Yeah. It was like one of the first few weeks, where I don't even remember what we were talking about, but the room was open for probably until like 4 a.m. Pacific. So like easily 8 or 9 hours. I think you fell asleep at one point, and everyone else was just talking about random stuff. That's like the crazy thing about the room itself, is not only is it a great way to meet other people, and obviously it's a dating room, but there's this whole spectrum of topics that people can talk about, whether it's, you know, very heavy stuff or like talking about Joshua's childhood or what pizza is best. Oh,
yeah, that's true. That is something that brings me insurmountable joy, is folks feeling like it's a safe space for them to have a myriad of conversations. I also think it's attributing to my corrupted sleep schedule, considering all 4 weeks of different rooms have gone on between 8 and 12 hours.
Big facts. Welcome, Rekha. How are you doing?
Hello, how you doing?
Hi, Rekha.
Good. This has been quite enjoyable. I'm learning new things about Joshua every day.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing? Always
it's
a good
thing.
Always a good thing.
I didn't know the business origin story. That was very interesting to me. The big facts room, it's like, well, I'm not really on the market, but then I always hear about afterwards that you talked about everything else. So I'm like, I don't want to, it's tempting to go in there, but I don't have the stamina to stay there for 6 hours or 7 hours. But you guys end up talking about not relationship things as well, right?
Yeah, all
totally.
The time. Often, actually, that's the direction the room goes in. And I think that's why the title is a little bit ambiguous, because dating's really just a jump off point where people think it's fun. We're curious and nosy as a people, right? So if they can hear about other people's experiences, suddenly it opens a beautiful can of worms.
Yeah, totally. If anyone else has a question, feel free to raise your hand. Again, just a quick reminder, the room's being recorded, so don't say anything that you don't want to put out to the internet and the world. But Rekha, you have a question?
I have a question.
Oh, go ahead.
I'm just meeting you for the first time and realizing that you were a competitive chess player. Did you watch Queen's Gambit?
Oh my goodness.
I'm sure you've been asked that.
Yes, I have watched it 3 times through. Once with another person, once with another person, mainly to see their reactions to the show. And yes, huge fan. I've talked about Queen's Gambit a few times on the podcast, but
Charjul's gonna teach me how to play chess, Rekha.
Oh yeah, I was gonna say, so I used to play competitive chess, and so I love the show. And I'll make this fairly short because I could talk about Queen's Gambit for like 5 hours. I love the show for 2 reasons. One, the storylines are amazing. And then the second, from like a very nerdy perspective, everything chess-wise that you see is 1,000% accurate. All the positions are right. The board is set up properly. The second time through I watched it, I was insanely nerdy, and I would pause on different positions and be like, that's not right. And then I would quickly be like, oh, wait, it is. And that just ability to get the accuracy to the game is something that filmmaking has never done well, aside from two other movies, which are very much chess-based as well, which is Queen of Katwe, that's K-T-W-E, and
Mira Nair directed that movie.
Exactly, yeah, great film, and they got all the chess pieces right, all everything else correct. And then the second one is, it's a documentary about a former chess grandmaster, or former chess world champion, Bobby Fischer, which is Searching for Bobby Fischer. But in my opinion, there's only been like three of those shows that or movies that have gotten chess accurate. And the reason Queen's Gambit did is because Garry Kasparov, who's the 13th world chess champion, and Bruce Pandolfini, who's a famous New York City East Coast chess coach.
We can't help it.
Yeah, he's great. They were both consultants for the show. And
Shardul, maybe that's your future career pivot. Maybe you'll be a professional chess consultant for TV and media.
I could. I have a couple friends that are grandmasters, but I think I'd have to get back into the competitive game and like unretire. So right now I just play through like the chess app here and there. My friend Sid and I host a clubhouse chess tournament every weekend. So this Saturday we'll host another one. There's no prize money, it's just bragging rights. any levels are welcome. You may understand Queen's Gambit a little bit better. I guess that's the only thing that you might get out of
it. Do chess players need cheerleaders? Because I have silent jazz hands for days.
I think there's like an SNL short where they are rooting on a chess team and they have cheerleaders in the background. So yes, chess needs a lot of cheerleaders.
I want to tell you why this moment is very full circle for me.
Go ahead.
So there's two experiences that really, really formed Lil J back in the day. One of them was RDB performing at Six Flags in New Jersey, which is a theme park, and me not being able to go because I wasn't tall enough to ride the rides. And my parents were like, listen, we're not paying for a ticket for you to not be able to ride rides so you can go see this concert.
Wait, for the listeners, who's RDB? Or tell them who RDB is.
Rhythm Dol Bass. They were a trio that made Punjabi music from the UK. And they were all the rage. And seeing them at a theme park in mainstream America blew my child mind. And the other experience was seeing DJ Raycut perform. And then into my teen years, I would then visit New York and sneak into Basement Bhangra, which I think I can no longer be persecuted for. So I was all up in there underage. And now DJ Vic has a client in year one of my first company. So them being on stage and asking a question makes my heart so happy.
Whoa, talk about complete full circleness. That's crazy.
And how ironic that somehow their app crashed and they're not in the room to hear that.
Oh, yeah, she just left. Yeah, part of the thing about Clubhouse for the people that are listening is it's it's a very cool platform, but it also encourages ghosting or just like leaving sometimes or like doing other things. So, you know, sometimes people leave stage because they have other things to do or they bump back down to the audience. But anyway, welcome, Bunkthi. How are you doing? You have a question for either of us?
What's up? Doing well. Very excited just listening in. This has been such a fun conversation. I could never imagine that you both, you know, haven't been friends for years because the way that you talk to each other, it's like, I feel like I'm like eavesdropping on a personal conversation.
Frankly, that's my MO online. I like to make everyone feel like we're having a personal conversation.
You do, which is totally kind of the question that I wanted to ask, Joshua. Like, I feel like every space that I've been in that I share with you, you use like language and you're so warm and you really help guide conversation forward. And something I personally am struggling with in terms of like authenticity is I tend to code switch a lot. Any advice, I think, especially brown girl to brown girl, on maintaining that?
Thank you. I'm learning how to respond to compliments like that, so I appreciate that. But I don't know. I think at one point I used to code switch when I was a little bit younger, and I started to ask myself why I did that, and I realized it was because I constantly felt like versions of myself weren't acceptable in different environments, be it with extremely Caucasian peers in luxury marketing jobs or with extremely South Asian folks that felt like I wasn't brown enough or whatever these experiences are that we all share in some capacity. And then I realized that if I just committed to being myself, whatever that sounds like and feels like, then maybe after the awkward silence of 30 seconds and the moment where no one knows what to say or you stutter, that after that, people go, okay, well, maybe she's just human and she's just being herself. And maybe we can do that too. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. So I guess the short long, which apparently I can never say anything short, so I'm really sorry. I guess the first thing would be to just keep doing it and keep being yourself because you owe yourself that much. And then you have to hope that if you do that enough times that everybody else will want to be a little bit more themselves.
Oh, totally agree. Because I think hearing other women who look like me, you know, speak authentically, it like reminds me I can do it and I can also be, you know, successful in pushing my messaging forward.
Definitely. I think we said this last night, but I'm a big believer of not inheriting bad habits. And I say that a lot because we have a choice to work towards not continuing problematic behaviors, even when they're about ourselves, right? We're often taught to better people, but no one really teaches us that you're allowed to unlearn things because they're not good for you. So, I mean, please unlearn that because I'm sure authentic Bunthi is someone we all want to meet because I definitely do.
Aw, she's working on it.
She can co-host a room anytime she wants.
Indeed. Yeah, Joshma said everything I was going to say. I'm just kidding. Yeah, that was fantastic.
He's not.
Yeah, the only thing I'd add is I was recently watching The Office, and I feel like the quote applies to everything. What is it? You miss 100% of shots that you don't take. So in terms of being authentic and putting yourself out there, if you want to go do something, I think especially now with the internet, the tools of creation that you have, it's just a matter of doing it rather than barriers that were previously there, whether it was like access to equipment or big sets, etc., or just the knowledge base. The podcast started sheerly out of I want to start a podcast and I don't know how to do it, so let me find a way to do it. And I feel like everyone should kind of put themselves out there, whether it's hosting a room on Clubhouse, getting better at conversations. I'm also terrible at taking compliments, so thanks for saying it sounds like we're really good friends. Ironically, I'm actually not that good at talking.
Could have fooled me.
Thanks. I actually had a stutter quite a bit when I was younger, so ironically, if you listen to other episodes of the podcast is my way of getting better at long-form talking because I'm actually really bad at it. So everyone has stuff they're working on and unlearning and learning. And I feel like building things in public or just telling people or hosting rooms on Clubhouse or just putting yourself out there is the best way to live and be authentic to yourself while you're building whatever you want to build.
Yeah, Bunthi, I think if there were one thing to say, not specific to Clubhouse, but we can use the example since it's the platform we're on. A lot of people crib and moan about whether people are experts in what they're saying or they deserve to be giving a knowledge based on credentials or whatever, what have you. And I realized at some point that I used to be really scared when I started writing and started being a journalist about talking about my life. But the things that I wrote best were about me. And when I was younger, I did a lot of speaking engagements, a lot of speech and debate, a lot of graduation speeches and stuff like that. And I realized the reason that those things turned out well or worked out for me is because I was talking about the one thing that we're all experts at, and that was me, right? And so I think it's really scary to share personal details about yourself, and everybody has their own spectrum of what is too public or too private. But I think our opinions, our thoughts, our lived experiences, nobody else can measure the level of authenticity of that or whether it's valid or not or anything else, right? You're really only measuring by, did you tell your story in the way that you wanted it to be heard? And so I think you owe yourself that. And I think we all do.
That's like incredibly inspiring. Thank you both.
Thank
Thanks
you.
Thanks for tuning in.
Yeah. So we're almost at 50 minutes, which is right around the length I typically do for pods. So this is the outro. Before I wrap up, anything you'd like to shout out, Joshma, in terms of directing the people to a certain place or listening to some music?
Yeah, one of two things. Check out Brown Girl Magazine, which is at Brown Girl Mag on all social platforms. And go check out our Spotify playlist. It's over 250 songs by South Asian artists around the world, predominantly diaspora, and lots and lots of women. And outside of that, follow me on Twitter or social and stay tuned for some really fun things that I hope make you feel seen next year.
What's the name of the playlist and what is the handle that people can follow all your stream of consciousness tweets at and wherever else?
The name of the playlist is New Music Mondays and it's under the handle Brown Girl Mag. I am at Jashima W, JASHIMAW. I had to think about how to spell my own name, ladies and gentlemen, but across all platforms.
Awesome. Yeah, my thing as always, as I try to shout out whenever I have guests, is go follow the guest. Joshma's got great takes on the best french fries in New York, all the way to helping people in the music industry. And I live at a very busy intersection. Everything is fine. No need for alarms here.
You know they're West Coast when they freak out about a siren.
Yeah, it's mostly for the people listening in the case they think it's like they're like something's happening around their house or something. But anyway, that's it for the Three Good Things podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in, you the listener. Thank you to Joshma for coming on the podcast and dropping dimes of knowledge as she always does. If you're on Clubhouse, check out the two rooms that she hosts on Mondays and Wednesdays. And if you have something to talk about, whether it's on music or the best french fries in New York or anything in between, feel free to reach her on Twitter at Joshma W on, and your DMs are open, I assume, right?
They are. Thank you for having me. This was awesome.
Yeah. If you have any feedback as a listener or if you want to be a guest on a future episode, feel free to hit me with my DMs. My handle is SHARDULGO on all platforms. That's where it will go. And I'd love to hear from you. Again, thank you so much for tuning in to the Three Good Things podcast. And I will see you tomorrow. Oh, shoot. I got to edit this later. There we go. Okay. And